You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to Northern Michigan's WTCM. It is New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design every Thursday at this time, live in the studio with Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Ron, it's so good to be with you here. Thanks for hanging out and sitting with us. Certainly appreciate it, sir.
Sitting in. A pleasure.
On Thursday.
It's a pressure. Pleasure.
Thursday, January 12th, 2023. And we are sitting with, as mentioned, Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning. It's great to be here today.
Great to have you. Thank you. RICP and Managing Executive at Prout. And our own Director of Operations, Deanne Jennings, as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Thursday, everyone.
So, today we're talking about the Secure Act 2.0. And why are we talking about it? Well, last week we discussed it somewhat with John Sluice. But there is so much information, and it's that in-depth. We definitely think it's worth a continuing conversation because we were not able to get as much into the information, and we want to continue it. So let's dive right in. Again, questions, if you would, Ron, if they have questions.
9-4-7-0-0-2-3 phone or text 237-7855.
Now, the first one, which probably gotten the most press, and by the way, you're going to see a lot of articles out here. We were talking about it this morning before the show. We're looking forward to going out and seeing Ed Slott in April because I think they're going to be geared about this. This is a big deal for a lot of reasons. So the RMD age increase, the age for required minimum distributions is increased to age 73 starting now. If you're 73 this year, which made you 72 last year, which means that you already had to start taking distributions, you get to continue those. But any year after this, anyone who turns 73 can wait until you are 73 to start taking your RMDs, required minimum distributions. And what is that percentage amount? It's about 3.7% of the amount in the account.
Well, Dennis, just another way to say what you just did, just saying it a little different so that people may get their head wrapped around this. The delayed RMD age applies to those who reach age 72 in 2023 or later. They will not have to start taking RMDs until next year, 2024, when they reach age 73. So the people who have the most impact would be those people that are 72 this year.
Yes, which is what I just said, but this is said in a different way. I like that. So if you're 72 this year, you get to wait until next year to start taking them.
Is that for IRAs and 401ks?
Yes, RMDs go over...
Just for any retirement account.
Well, yes, but there are, you know, we always have these exceptions, like if you're still working and you're in a 401k,
that's what I was thinking. So
you don't
caveats.
Have to take an RMD, but in most cases... You probably would have to take an RMD, but then again, remember those Roth IRAs, and we have some new rules, but the Roth IRAs, you don't have to take an RMD.
Okay. If you thought it was simple before, just you wait, young man. So what's crazy about this, Ron, think about this. I don't know, you love this concept, but if you were working at WTCM until you were 75, you would not have to take RMD distributions from the 401k.
Because you're working beyond 73.
And you're not more than a 5% owner in the company.
Right.
So because of that, it allows you to delay those. But in the year in which you retire, you have to take your first RMD if you're over the age of 73 from the 401k itself. You can't commingle that with other accounts to say, well, can I take it all out of my IRA? The answer to that is no. You can commingle IRAs to determine your RMDs, but not 401ks.
So just to even make it more complicated, Ron, in this same situation, if you were going to retire on December 28th versus if you just waited a few days and retired in January, you wouldn't have to take that RMD till the next year instead of the year.
Another question. Yeah. Whose money is it in my account?
Well, that's a question for the federal government, Ron. Whose money is it anyway? Indeed, it is your money. It is your money. And what's interesting is, what are the rights you have in terms of distributing it? Well, in many cases, you have an in-service distribution option when you're over 59 and a half to take all that money out of the 401k tax-free and move it to your IRA. So what are your rights and privileges under the law, if you will? And when don't you want to take advantage of those? So this, even though there are changes here, the changes in some respects afford you more options and potentially better ways to accumulate more dollars for your retirement. Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
The next one. Now, this is interesting. The QCDs have been expanded. Who's he? The QCD.
Qualified Charitable Donation.
I can't believe how close you are.
Qualified. That's really good, Ron.
It is.
Qualified charitable distribution.
Ah, there you go. That's right. Not donation, distribution.
Now, starting in 2023, hello, that is this year. I'm looking at the calendar there in the corner, January of 23. That's what it says. Okay, thank you. Starting in 23, a one-time only $50,000 qualified charitable distribution to a charitable gift annuity is allowed. Think about that. Just a moment. If you were charitably inclined and you had a larger sum generally in your IRA, you want to give it to charity anyway, but you say, you know, I'd like to draw some tax advantaged income and help that charity. Well, you may decide that you want to contribute through a qualified charitable distribution to a charitable gift annuity. For instance, St. Jude's Children's Hospital. They love that concept because they pay you an income of, let's say, 6% of the amount.
Wait a minute.
Let's say whether it's $10,000 or $20,000 or up to $50,000. If it's $50,000, 6% times $50,000 is $250 a month or $3,000 a year, approximately. We're speaking in approximates here, okay?
Right.
So you could draw that income for life. Well, what if I live to 100? It's good for life. What if I only live in for 3 years? Then the money goes to the charity. That's the negative of this one. All of it then goes to the charity at your passing, at your death. Well, that's what I'm doing with a part of my IRA anyway. Mm. Could this be an option for me? It could be.
So it's an annuity through a, one of these qualified charitable organizations.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And you put, say, $50,000, you get a little payment off that, as
income
you said.
Income for life.
Do they just sit around and wait for you to die and take the lump sum, or do they make some every year, too?
They don't make any.
They're
simply willing to wait on the sidelines for the opportunity to say, you gave $50,000 and let's say it's worth $35,000 when you pass away. Whatever it is, given what they've been able to earn in their portfolio versus what they paid you, maybe it's 75. Maybe they've done extremely well. See? So they get to use that money to invest it and pay you an income at the same time. That's how that works internally with the charitable organizations. Generally, you want to stay with bigger organizations for a charitable gift annuity and organizations that you believe will continue into perpetuity.
Hmm.
So there is some risk with that, with the charity itself and its ability to continue to make payments to you. Caveat. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You can also do a charitable remainder unit trust or a charitable remainder annuity trust, which would be a more conservative way to do that. You keep more control of the funds. You're still able to draw income, but eventually that money all goes to the charity through that trust. But there's no tax on the transfer to those particular tax-qualified organizations. Now, that is pretty slick.
Mm-hmm.
I think once the rules and regs come out on all this stuff, see, we're on the leading edge here, Ron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
in terms of this information. So what I mean by that is all the regulatory agencies and those groups that draw up the language for this, they've got to catch up now. It's catch-up time.
So all the groups that decide how I can spend my money, you mean, right?
Well, these charitable organizations, they got to come up with all the documentation to make certain that the, you know, like they can handle this, the dollars coming in, the figuring out the payment streams, all the rest.
So that's new. Do you expect a lot of these large charitable organizations to take advantage of that?
I honestly don't know. But I think that it's one more arrow in the quiver.
It's going to make it easier. A lot of places will have this, like, you know, I've been to some of the Hillsdale education.
Yeah,
on,
a great example.
Charitable annuities. And this is just going to be another avenue where you can give to charity. It's making it a little easier. A lot of these rules have a benefit, these new rules. But they're not, the caveat to that is they're not so easy to understand, and there's a lot of ins and outs, and some things start this year, some 2 or 3 years down the line.
But you want to be wary, too, of any groups you've never heard of, or, you know, you don't want to, you'd be careful.
You want to check it
always.
Out.
Yep.
As always.
Get advice along with this, you know. Yep. What do you know about this organization, Hillsdale? I mean, talk about a great organization, right? But, you know, others that you may not have heard of. As always, buyer beware whenever you're looking at a strategy like this.
It's pretty cool. What do you call that again?
It's called a QCD, the expansion of the qualified charitable distribution. And I think it's really quite ingenious. As Heidi mentioned, it's an expansion of that. Think of this. You could give $10,000 out of your IRA, rather. Now, you have to be over 70 and a half to do this.
Correct.
The QCD is only available if you're over 70 and a half. So you have a long way to go there, Ron. Okay?
Yes, I do.
Yes, sir.
We have one question going back to RMDs on the text line. How is the, quote, amount in account determined for RMD? My account in 2022 is much lower than 2021.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's 12/31 of 22. December 31st of 22, whatever the value was at that point, that's what your RMD is figured on, as well as your age. How old are you?
So it's the previous year end. Yep. For 2023, it's December 31st of 2022. So you always look to the previous year, and it's whatever it is. When the market goes down, that means people may not have as high RMDs as they had last year. It all depends on... You know, the divisor on the chart that Dennis explained, that changes every year. And, of course, your balance changes as the market changes. So that's why every year that number, that RMD number, is going to be different.
Do you have the divisor chart, that uniform gift table? Well, let's say at age 80, it's 16 years is the life expectancy. We're close on that. It's about 5.3% that you have to take when you're age 80. Unless your spouse is more than 10 years younger than you, and then you get to take less. Hmm. Oh, really, Dennis? I didn't consider that. So, you know, there are some caveats, but not that many. So 80, interesting. 5.3% or so on $100,000, it's going to be about $5,300 that you need to take that year. It's the age at which you turn the year in which you're taking your RMD. So you may be 79. Well, I turn 80 in July. Then you use the divisor, which is connected to age. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a call from Amity, who's from Maple City. However, he's calling from Tennessee as he drives home from Florida.
Well, welcome. Oh.
Hello, Amity.
It's probably warm.
Hello.
Hi there. What can we do for you?
RMDs are very confusing, but I think you were saying that you don't have to apply the RMD if you're still working.
If you're still working in a 401k plan and you're less than a 5% owner of the company.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You'd still have if you have outside IRAs, outside of your 401k, you would still have to take an RMD from those accounts.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a soccer referee, and I make about $2,000 to $3,000 a year. Mm-hmm. We're considered independent contractors, and I do pay taxes on that, federal and state taxes. So I was thinking, oh, maybe I'm an independent owner or something like that. So, but that wouldn't apply to it.
It would not.
Okay. That clarifies it.
Okay.
Excellent. Thanks for the call, and travel safe.
I another quick question.
Sure, sure.
Fiduciary. What is a fiduciary?
A fiduciary is a higher level of responsibility taken by the financial advisor, in this case, if that's what we're talking about, to recommend and or give you advice on investments that is more closely aligned with what they would do themselves as the best measure. What are you doing for yourself, and or what is the best investment for you to own in this situation? Not what's just a good investment, what's the best investment? Now, there is no best, but it's a higher level of care and a higher level of grading, if you will, of the investment portfolio than you normally get as a fiduciary. So what is in your best interest in this situation? It's a higher level of compliance, too. Okay.
You have to do what's best for the client. Always put the client's needs and situation first.
First. That's what we are as well. Okay?
I would think most financial advisors try to do the best for their clients.
They do. I mean, in the overall. But generally, that occurs when there's more of a fee-orientated situation going, a fee for service. Okay?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Amity. Drive safe. Back to northern Michigan.
That's right.
Through the mountains of Tennessee.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm surprised he's able to grab the TCM in, you know, in the vehicle.
That's what I was thinking. In the mountains?
The magic of radio. He must be apped up, must have our app on his phone. And
there you go. He's just doing it through that.
Yeah. I use that when I travel.
Yeah.
I use your app to hear the show. So.
All right.
So before we dive back into the Secure 2.0, we've got some notes regarding stats from the Deanne Jennings with us. Get it, Deanne, please.
Absolutely. The average household retirement account savings of Americans aged 65 to 74 is $426,000. And that source is Federal Reserve and Senior Lit.
That number surprised me. 425 or so.
And that's the average, retirement average. Savings?
Age 65 to 74.
I think it's probably all savings.
Oh, no, retirement. It says retirement.
It's retirement accounts.
So is that, you're surprised, is that a good number, do you think?
Better than I was thinking would be. You know, because we looked at the numbers on up to age 65, it's like less than 100 grand or whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're preparing. They're ready. Mm-hmm. The seven largest stocks in the S&P 500 at the start of 2022 finished the year down an average of 46.3% with declines in the range of 26.8% to 65%.
So that's why the market, you know,
yes.
was an anomaly and it's down. It was down about 12% last year. Well, the S&P 500 had a much wider index. Down much greater than that in the range of 2022, I think it was, or so, in 2022.
Ouch.
Yes. Their combined market cap fell $4.9 trillion from $11.8 trillion down to $6.9 trillion. The remaining stocks in this index finished the year down an average of just 11.6%, and that source is Bespoke. Yes. Oh. Do gains follow losses? Since 1928, the S&P has traded higher in the year after a down year 70% of the time. In the year after an up year, the S&P has been higher 66% of the time.
So two-thirds is on our side at this point. We'll see, right?
Where there's a will, despite its importance in order to ensure the smooth settlement of one's estate, a 2022 study found that the two-thirds of Americans do have a will. Do not have a will. Of those with a high school diploma or less, only 26% have a will. But among even those with postgraduate degrees, only 54% have a will. And that source is caring.com.
And all I can say is where there's a will, there's a way, Ron.
I have no will. I'm just blowing like a leaf in the wind.
Yeah.
No cool
wind.
Yeah.
Right.
No will. Wow.
Here's a fun one. Higher temps and lower taxes. From the start of the COVID outbreak through last July, the three states that saw the largest outflows of residents were California, New York, and Illinois.
Such
and
popular places. Why would you guess that's the case?
It's a net loss of 1.8 million people. While Florida, Texas, and North Carolina saw the largest inflows, a net gain of 1.3 million residents, and that source is U.S. Census.
People vote with their feet sometimes, don't they?
Why would you want to go somewhere warm and sunny?
And that pays lower, and that has a lower tax bracket rate. Yes.
Exactly. It's more to do with the weather. Mm-hmm. Weather finances.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. The numbers.
The state income tax, like Florida, I know, does not have one. I don't know about
Neither
Texas and North Carolina.
Tennessee doesn't have one. Texas doesn't have.
I honestly don't know.
I think people seek that out, but I heard a lot of legislatures, not Michigan's, unfortunately, is looking toward how can we substantially cut or eliminate our income tax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a good old-fashioned competition.
Yeah.
It can tend to work. All of a sudden, they're going to have to sit up and take notice. Now, why are they all moving? I'm sure they're having those conversations because it points to the importance of the competition and also the responsibility in spending, the revenue and all the rest. Accountability.
Yes, indeed.
Accountability, shall we? All right. Heidi is going to be discussing the employer plans related to the Secure 2.0 Act and those changes.
So big
changes here.
One of the things that got adjusted with the new Secure 2.0 are that RMDs for Roth 401ks are no longer required. Now, we had been talking about earlier in the show how your traditional contributions, you would have to take an RMD if you were no longer working at the company. But part of this new law is that RMDs for Roth 401ks, which used to be required, are no longer required. Just like Roth IRAs don't have RMDs, now Roth 401ks don't have RMDs.
Which is a great change of the law. That was an egregious miss earlier. Why does someone with a Roth 401k have to take a required an RMD? Well, that's gone. So that's great.
And yeah. So just so everyone knows, one of those confusing details with this law is everything starts at a different time. This begins in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just keep that in mind if that affects you. Now, there are things that we've talked about on this show that if you're over 50 years old, there is an opportunity called a catch-up contribution that you can contribute more to your 401k than you could than you can if you are under 50. And we call those the catch-up contributions. So starting in 2025, employees age 60, 61, 62, or 63 are going to be able to make even higher catch-up contributions. The ages 60 to 63 catch-up limit for 2025 is going to be 1.5 times that of the regular contribution limit in effect for 2024.
Now, the regular contribution limit for right now, for now, if you will, on a 401k is $7,500, is it not?
That is, yep, I think that's right. I have the sheet here somewhere.
Yeah, it's let's see here, Dennis Pratt. It's $7,500, yes.
Yeah.
See, that Inspector Clouseau thing is contagious.
So, just again reiterating, it's like different years, different ages for all of these things. So if any of these things catch your ear and you think, wow, this could impact me, or I'm sort of interested in taking advantage of this opportunity, you want to make sure that you check with somebody, because you want to make sure you don't do it too soon and get yourself into a problem with a penalty or something. So those are things to check with your financial advisor.
Yep, exactly. Financial advisor and or the representative of your 401k. Now, they're going to be catching up to these new rules and regs, too. All right?
I heard at the Heinz Corporation, they're going to help their employees out with the catch-up contribution.
They probably even get additional catch-up.
Yep. additional catch-up.
So another new thing is auto enrollment for new plans will start in 2024. Many newly established company plans will be required to automatically enroll employees in the plan unless they choose to opt out. It says here, however, contrary to certain news reports, so things that are out there in the news, this provision does not apply to existing plans. But anyone who starts a new plan starting in 2024, all employees are going to be required to be in the plan unless they opt out themselves. So
what is it now?
The employee has to sign up to be part of the plan.
Oh, okay.
Once you become eligible, it's usually the employee needs to open an account. In this new case, the company will open an account for that person.
Like automatically.
Automatically.
Okay. Unless the employee says, I don't want that.
Right. There'll probably be a form developed by 2024.
I'm sure there
would
be.
Situation. And like Dennis said, a lot of these things, like this was passed in December. So a lot of custodians, a lot of financial institutions, they don't even have the rules or even the paperwork established to do this. But we'll see that sort of stuff roll out as the year progresses and as people are getting through these new rules that they need to enforce. There's a few more things. Solo 401ks. Currently, a self-employed person who wants to open a new solo 401k, that's where you have one participant in there, and make elective deferrals, they have to do that before December 31st of that plan year. Under this new act, sole proprietors will now have until the due date without extensions of their tax return. So you would be able to finish the December year and then decide, hey, you know, I'm going to open this plan for myself, try to work on maybe the tax liability that you have, and you can start a plan. So that actually offers more flexibility.
It's more flexibility in terms of in as well as out. Remember, MASH, I can go in and out, in, out.
In,
so
out.
That was Major Frank Burns. Thank you very much. So what's interesting about that is, they're going to generally make it easier for those who want to participate or should participate. We'll just put it that way. And as well as drawing monies out.
Can I ask a question from the text line?
Yes, sir. Let's do that.
Roth 457. Are there RMDs for that still, the Roth 457?
Usually we clump all those number ones, 457, 403Bs, all those go in the rules that they have. But with the new rule, I believe all plans will not have a Roth RMD requirement for whatever type of employer plan that you have.
Correct. Now, the 457 has not been addressed specifically in our information, but
right.
I would say most likely that is included as well, the 457 as well as the 403B.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, do you have to be 21 to participate in a 401k at work?
It all depends on what's in your plan document. When employers set up a 401k plan, there is a myriad of choices that they can make. So like when Dennis and I deal with our clients and they come in, we can't say, oh, this plan's going to allow this or this, because every single plan, they have so many choices. They're never exactly the same. We can tell you what the general the general trend is that people offer. So you always have to go back to your specific plan document and find out.
And the plan document is about a 3x5 document. The fine print is so fine that you usually can't even read it, you know. So that's what happens with
that's
those.
When you get a magnifying glass.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing in this Secure 2.0 Act is that there's a lot of changes to the advantage of employers seeking 401ks or having 401ks.
And to having them and also employees to accumulating more. Because it's interesting what John said last week, and that goes directly into that. He said, you know, the Fed, and I think even our own Congress people, be careful there, Dennis, would say you need to be able to depend more on your own assets than those that might be produced through Social Security and other federal government entities. And how do they do that? By encouraging more people to save more.
When planning for your retirement.
Let's hit one more point. The new exceptions to the 10% early distribution penalty for those in our audience who are younger. A slew of new 10% penalty exceptions have been added with different effective dates. These include distributions for terminal illness, effective immediately. Federally declared natural disasters from New York. $22,000 limit, That effective retroactively to 1/26 of 21. Significant increases there. Pension linked emergency savings accounts, $2,500 limit effective 2024. Domestic abuse, $10,000 limit effective 2024. Now, you had actually some details on that, didn't you?
Yeah, there's some details because it's like, how do you know and how do you prove this? Well, effective in 2024, the exception is created for victims of domestic abuse that occur within the previous 12 months by a spouse or domestic partner. Those in need of leveraging this exception can self-certify that they experienced domestic abuse and withdraw the lesser of $10,000 or half of the balance in the account.
So some significant additions, including emergencies, financial emergencies, that's effective in 2024, a $1,000 limit, and long-term care, $2,500 limit, effective in 2025. So this is going to be gradually incorporated into the law, in terms of what's going to be available without having to pay the 10% penalty, but allow those who are participating some greater leverage in the worst case scenarios.
That's okay. Early withdrawal out of your 401k and or IRA?
IRAs, and in terms of a slew of different effective dates, it doesn't say there specifically. What do you have, Heidi, in your notes? See?
It says this new exception is applicable to plans like 401ks and IRAs.
Nice.
Voila.
Good question.
Voila. Because it's not always the case.
And just on the financial emergency, you can self-certify that the emergency is real, but... and it's $1,000 you can take out. But additionally, no other emergency distributions may be taken in the following 3 years. So you really want to think about whether you want to do that.
That's a good point.
And then, or
you're only allowed one emergency every 3 years.
Right. Or until the original distribution is repaid or future salary deferrals or contributions meet or exceed that $1,000 amount. So, again... the rule, it's good. It's going to help people in certain situations, but you really want to go back and make sure that you're not cutting yourself off from something else. Mm-hmm. Or when you qualify, what's the ramification of taking that action? So look before you leap.
So you're saying a cruise may not be an emergency. Maybe.
Well, you'd have to find an emergency to take that $1,000 out that you... I don't know. Maybe you could find a reasoning for the cruise.
This is a really big one, I think. Rollovers from 529 plans to Roth IRAs. Mm. 529 plans. Now, there's some certain rules and regs that go along with this. But effective in 2024, beneficiaries, generally the child of the parent, of 529 college savings accounts are permitted to roll over up to $35,000 aggregate over the course of their lifetime. So that would be according to their Roth contribution limit. Under current law, that'd be $6,500 for someone who's under the age of 50. $6,500 per year. So in theory then, about over a five-year period, that particular child, if he or she has not used that amount in their 529 plan, and you see and they see the benefit of transferring it direct to their own Roth IRA, you could make full contributions for between a 5 and 6 year period and get $35,000 out of that 529 plan. Now, the other catch to that is the plan must have been in force for 15 years or more. Mm. Okay. So, It, you know, 15 years goes by relatively quickly. You know, think of when you were 5 and then 20. Think about it. So, you know, whatever that is for you and the child. That can be significant, right? In terms of the ability to, in essence, convert $35,000 to a Roth. Nice.
Well, it's a great option, and what a nice gift if the child gets a scholarship or something and is able to pay for more than you anticipate, that you're still able to benefit that child by having them roll that over to a Roth IRA, and it's so important to start Roth IRAs. The younger you are, the more powerful they become. So it could be a positive.
Absolutely, I think. Now, more Rothification, by the way. How much time do we have left here, Ron, if I may?
3 to 4 minutes.
Three to four. Okay, three to four. Cool. Now, after the, we're not going to have time for the song "Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone," right? We're not going to have time for that right on the air here.
We can play a little on the way out.
Be a song that'd be perfect for this kind of weather we're having. Thank you so much. Ay, ay, ay. So the trend toward Rothification continues as Congress seeks immediate tax revenue. SEP and simple IRA plans can allow Roth contributions beginning in 2023.
That's amazing.
Who would have ever thought? I mean, oh my gosh. So they're going to be scrambling, the simple and SEP documentation people, if you will, the legal eagle side of these plans, to allow these to accept Roth contributions, because they're going to have to be separate accounts available so that these can be tracked. Well, is that money that I'm drawing out taxable or not? Well, you can't deduct it going in, but it comes out tax-free. Tax-free. Well, now, why would I want to do that? Well, do you picture your tax bracket being higher in the future?
Well, and that was one of the big things people didn't... Employers were like, oh, I don't know if I wanted some, because I really wanted to have something I could put Roth contributions into. Mm-hmm. So this is going to open that up for smaller employers to be able to take advantage of the higher contribution limits in employer plans to put more money into a Roth.
It's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, we need to have a class on this, Heidi. Mm. What do you think?
We probably should.
We have one scheduled. Oh, I forgot more about it. On March 15th.
So, just planning.
Yes, right. Yeah, in planning, in the process. So we intend to have, we have a classroom now at Prout, where we can have these kinds of breakout sessions, and I think it's going to be important that, in terms of using that, but talking about these situations, to add more information out there.
So since you have new offices and you allowed for that classroom space, designed that, did you throw any cool options in there? Like, do you have a video screen or a whiteboard or any of that stuff?
Yeah, got a couple of video screens. There's a stove in there, microwave.
There you go.
A fridge. I mean, crazy stuff.
A water cooler. We pulled all the steps.
Yeah. That's right down from the pool, right down the hallway from the pool.
All plan catch-up contributions for age 50 or over higher income employees must be Roth contributions. So the employee will pay the tax. The employer still gets to deduct it going in. We just found that out this morning in reviewing the rules on that. So, well, this is wild stuff, Al.
Wild.
Really an expansion of retirement accounts, their options, what you can do for every age every age out there in terms of participants, IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, 403bs. This is an expansion of these accounts to make them more viable for
Yeah, but it's going to impact your tax planning for 2024 if you're not able to deduct those catch-up contributions. So you're going to want to review your situation.
Absolutely. Take a look at your brackets. You know, there's always that, isn't there? How much is it going to cost me? And is the trade-off worth it? That's a conversation we have daily at proutfinancialdesign.com.
.com.
231-947-3992.
And located now on 8th Street at Garfield.
1105 East 8th Street. Come and see us.
Yes, indeed.
All right, we're live on Thursday. If you're listening Saturday, it's a rerun. We rerun the program every Saturday at 9 a.m. Live Thursdays, 10 to 11. Prout Financial Design's new retirement radio, Mr. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Deanne Jennings. Thank you all.